HDRadioNetwork.com.
It's time for the Sheehan Sports Hour with your host, Doug Sheehan. Talking everything sports, from baseball to hockey to racing and everything in between, nothing sports related is off topic. Give Doug a call now, 774-745-5950. Each and every Wednesday night, heard exclusively on the Victory Lane Radio Network. Let's go to Doug Sheehan.
All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to the Sheehan Sports Hour. I'm your host, Doug Sheehan. It's been a while, a couple weeks since the last show. We are back and ready to go here August 31st, 2016, live at 9 p.m. We're going to start off talking some NASCAR. I get Joey Stone on the line. He is back after being away for a couple weeks from the show, as well as I have, obviously. Around 9:20, we'll have Boof Bonzer on, former Major League Baseball relief pitcher, played for the Minnesota Twins, Boston Red Sox, Oakland A's, among others. And after that, I'll be talking some fantasy football heading into the beginning of the NFL season and who I've been drafting and who I'm looking out for coming into this football season, because fantasy football is always exciting every single year, at least for me personally, playing in multiple leagues. But first things first, Joey Stone on the line. Joey, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, doing good. It's been quite a long time.
I know it has been a while. We've been going back and forth trying to line something up, and finally we were able to. But first things first, Kyle Larson picks up his first career win at Michigan just last weekend in a rather, you know, at least results-wise, pretty identical to the first Michigan race. This time, though, Joey Logano finished 10th, but we see Kyle Larson in second, Chase Elliott in third. Ryan Blaney even had a good run, knowing he needs to win most likely to get into the chase, finishing fourth. And then two veterans in Keselowski and Harvick finishing third and fifth. What were your thoughts overall on the race and how the new aero package worked out?
I thought the race was pretty good as a whole. It brought a lot of memories back of the June race, particularly in one certain restart that I was really upset about. Happened 2 for 2. Anyway. The package, though, seemed pretty well. I do know there's people out there that still don't like it, and there's still some little tweaks that NASCAR can make for that package, but it does look pretty good. Looks like people can still pass each other and everything. Number one, really happy that Kyle Larson won. I believe this is the start. This is the true start of the youth movement. I think this is where we're really going to start seeing the young guns actually start shining, running more up the front. Feel like Larson can really start that energizing motivation for everyone else to go. I'm telling you right now, I'm pretty sure the next guy who's going to win a race is probably going to be Chase, because he's come far too close, and I think the last thing he wants is another restart like that. And really just think this whole race sums up the start of what's coming up next for NASCAR. I think we're going to start leaving the Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick era and more into the Kyle Larson, Logano, Elliott, Blaney movement in the next year or two. And I'll start with Kyle Larson's win right there. And I just think it's going to start getting more rookies and more young guns to start winning more and more as the years go on. So overall, a really good race. Not a lot of action. I would say not a lot of like wrecks or any of that stuff. A lot of green flag runs, but overall, I thought it was a good race.
Yeah, I have pretty much the same outlook on it, honestly. I watched most of the race. I had to go back after I recorded it and catch up on what I missed on. But, you know, at a track like Michigan, to me, I don't really mind if it isn't that exciting. As you know, it's always a very fast-paced race. And when it comes down to it, you know, it's one of those survival of the fittest tracks where you're not going to have a massive amount of cautions like a Daytona, because it does spread out, unlike Daytona or Talladega. Yet you still get those high speeds. And like I said before, earlier this year, we saw in Michigan, we saw Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott have a ton of success, and they brought back, I'd imagine, the same setup, and they really kicked some more butt and got up there finishing 1-2, and that's exactly what you want to see. As for Chase Elliott finishing in second place, he's most likely going to make the chase. I don't really see, I'd imagine he's locked in by now if he isn't, he will be, barring any catastrophes in these last couple of weeks. But going into Darlington, I know you're going to go soon, but going into Darlington, what are you expecting from that race? We saw last year, it was a pretty good race all around. Of course, with the throwback schemes and whatnot. But what are you expecting headed into Darlington this year?
Well, obviously a lot of flashy paint schemes. I think we're really going to see a good race. I think last year it was a great race. I love the traditional commentary they had with Ned Jarrett and all up in the booth. Maybe we can expect that again. I feel like now more the drivers see this as a title they can put under the name. Like, I won the traditional Southern 500, the throwback Southern 500, because everybody wants to win that race with all those cool paint schemes and everything. And I think we're really going to see somebody shine this weekend. I think it's not going to be your typical winner. I think a lot of people are going to go for it. I think we're going to see a lot of cautions, a lot of chase woes. We're going to see a bunch of crazy things happen this weekend as they head on to Richmond after that week. So I expect a really crazy race.
Yeah, I would imagine. Darlington's always exciting from an outside point of view. And it's one of the most, tough races to win, trying to run around that track. It's a very odd shape, obviously. One turn, you can sort of lay off the brake a little bit and kind of coast through the corner and get in the gas early, and then you get turns 3 and 4 where you really get a hammer on that brake and take that turn lightly. And, you know, as much as wide the track is going in the corners especially, you only really run in that upper groove. And despite the fact that it's not, against the rules to go below that, that line, you don't see that happening, and it really narrows the track down, and you see some really close, fast-paced action. Before I let you go, man, who's your pick to win this week at Darlington?
Well, let's see if the magic works this week. He's had a lot of great weeks. He's had a lot of bad weeks. He's had a lot of triumphs, and I feel like all those triumphs are finally going to pay off for him. I think Chase Elliott is going to win Darlington. I think the Hendrick Power is finally going to come back fully after Michigan. You heard Chase in his post-race interview say that he won't be in the car unless he knows he can win a race. And I think, especially with his success there in his Xfinity days and all that whatnot, expect him to have a really good run. If not, I think he's going to have a shot at the win. So expect a rookie to get their first win at Darlington, and I think it's going to be a really good race.
I expect that too as well. I don't know if I see Elliott winning it, but he's going to contend. He'll be up there. It's pretty much a toss-up between at least 10 guys week in and week out. So we'll see how Chase Elliott can perform. But, Joey, thanks for joining me this week on the show, and hopefully I'll talk to you next week after Darlington.
Hey, no problem, man. Looking forward to it.
I'll talk to you later. All right, Joey Stone, everybody. Thanks to him for coming on once again to the Sheehan Sports Hour. It's been a while since he's been on, but one of my regular guests talks some NASCAR, so I appreciate him stopping by. Again, around 9:20, we'll be hearing from Boof Bonser, former Major League Baseball player he played mainly for the Minnesota Twins as a relief pitcher. He was part of a huge trade in Minnesota history when they traded A.J. Pierzynski to the Giants in return for Boof Bonser, Joe Nathan, and Francisco Liriano, if I'm not mistaken, which is a massive deal that really, despite the Twins not having too much success, that was one deal that really molded their future. Joe Nathan, arguably one of the greatest closers of all time, and Francisco Liriano had some awesome years in Minnesota and then has moved on. I think he's in Pittsburgh now, still making a name for himself after he fell off for a couple of years, but he'll be joining me shortly. Just to wrap up on the NASCAR talk, going through the field here, we saw some good runs. The top 10 looked like Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Brad Keselowski, Ryan Blaney, Kevin Harvick, Jimmy Johnson, Carl Edwards, Jamie McMurray, Denny Hamlin, and Joey Logano. So, again, not too many surprising names there. It's good to see Jamie McMurray come home with the top 10. Greg Biffle finished 11th, a good run for him. Some tough breaks. Clint Boyer had problems early on. He finishes dead last. Chris Buescher follows up his 5th place finish at Bristol with a 35th place finish here at Michigan. I believe he got into a wreck as well, had something go wrong. Like I said, I wasn't able to watch the entire race. I watched most of it, went back, watched what I could. But I got the general idea of it for the most part. Kyle Busch had a relatively weak run. It was weird, a few of the Gibbs cars, or a few of the Toyotas at least, struggled. And Matt Kenseth coming home 13th, Kyle Busch in 19th, and Truex in 20th. But you know they're going to turn it around. Darlington is a track where, you know, I expect Busch to have a good run. Kenta should have a good run. But you're also going to have to compete with some really good Chevys at Darlington, like Jimmy Johnson, like Chase Elliott, like Kevin Harvick. Kurt Busch has won there before. So there's plenty of guys left to contend with. Brad Keselowski always it runs well. Did he win last year? I can't remember who won last year's Southern 500. But, you know, you expect... I say this every week, you know, you expect certain guys to run well week in and week out. And, you know, it was Carl Edwards who won last year. That's what it was, right? So, and Edwards, he looked good last week. He got a top 10. So we'll see him going in on a relative hot streak. You know, he's already locked into the chase. But again, the Southern 500 is one of those big four races. You know, you got the 500, Daytona 500, Southern 500, Coke 600. And you have the, I'm forgetting the other one, Indy, the Brickyard. So winning the Southern 500 is a huge deal for a lot of guys. And, you know, we saw Regan Smith win it a few years ago with Furniture Row. I believe it was 2011. You know, being able to stay out and managing to hold off some of the top cars and come home with a victory there. I believe it was actually Carl Edwards he held off and Casey Kane. So, you know, that it's just one of those milestone races, and a lot of people may overlook it because it's not Daytona or it's not Indianapolis. But Darlington is one of the most well-known NASCAR tracks. It's one of the most unique tracks, and especially because of all these throwback schemes, they're doing a fantastic job marketing the place to, you know, get down to the race, or if you can't get to the race, watch the race, because you're going to see so many cool cars. And... you know, you see, you know, Matt Kenseth is running the Tide car, which we've seen, you know, Ricky Rudd, Ricky Craven drive in, you know, that iconic Tide scheme. Brad Keselowski is going to have a nice throwback scheme. Chase Elliott. Jimmy Johnson has a really old Lowe's paint scheme. Kevin Harvick with the old Busch one. Kyle Busch is running an Interstate Batteries one, pretty much like the Bobby Labonte car. Joey Logano is running the same car he ran last year, and that's fine because the Shell Pennzoil throwback deal they had last year was really, really nice. All the Richard Childress cars are running a similar paint scheme. I believe it was the original number 3 that Richard Childress drove, I think. A really kind of odd font, but it looks pretty nice. Tony Stewart hooked up with Coca-Cola for a nice Coca-Cola throwback scheme. You know, there's so many really cool paint jobs that we'll see this weekend, and you know, you'll probably see some, you know, pretty nice, you know, different you know, there's a few guys who aren't running them, but you'll see a good amount of pretty nice different schemes that, you know, excite you. And then you'll also see what they did last year. Joey mentioned it, the Ned Jarrett deal where they had them, broadcast. Who was it? It was Ned Jarrett. I can't remember who else it was. And they had them broadcast, and it was really cool, kind of a throwback. One second here, just talking a booth. Okay, I got a call from him. I wasn't sure if it was him, so I just wanted to double check. But you'll see a lot of the, you know, the similar things. And I hope they kind of, you know, a lot of people didn't like the old school commentary. I thought it was a bit odd that people didn't like it. I thought it was neat. You know, they didn't do the whole race. They did only a section of the race, but it really kind of made it interesting. I thought, at least. I enjoyed it. So joining me right now on the line, Boof Bonser, former Major League Baseball relief pitcher of a handful of different teams. Boof, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. I meant to get your number previously, and I forgot, so I wasn't sure if that was you calling, but I assumed it was, so I just double-checked.
Yeah, you know, the Florida number call in Massachusetts is a little different. You know?
Yeah, I was kind of thrown off. I couldn't exactly remember, but thanks for coming on. Now, first things first, obviously you had a nice career in the major leagues, and now you've retired. And, you know, when you compare your retirement age to other guys, you know, their late 30s, early 40s, what is it like for you to sort of be, I guess, one of the more younger guys to retire from the MLB?
Well, it's definitely not fun. You know, I had a fair share of injuries and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously I still watch the game and follow the game and still wish I was out there playing, you know, especially when you see these guys that are, you know, older than me and still playing. So, you know, there are times where I still wish I was out there. So it's definitely not fun, but, you know, the surgery bug kind of got the best of me, I guess you could say.
Now you had Tommy John surgery, correct?
Yeah, that was one of them.
Okay, so just speaking more specifically to that, obviously that is the most popular surgery pitchers get in, you know, any form of baseball, whether you're in the MLB or even in minors, you see college kids getting it. What is the, you know, having went through that, is there something that you could have done to avoid it, or is it just something that with all the wear and tear on your arm, going at a weird angle when you're pitching in general, is it just something that happens?
I think so. I mean, between the innings and just playing a bunch, I mean, Little League growing up, it's, you know, on the off season, we definitely, you know, you do forearm exercises, shoulder exercises. I mean, so it's, you're strengthening it, but, you know, like I said, with the wear and tear and the innings and stuff like that, there's definitely nothing to prevent that at all. That's my feeling on that, on Tommy John.
Yeah, it's such a tough thing to see. I've seen a kid I played high school baseball with at one point go through it around the age of 19, and it's unbelievable to think, you know, it's something that, like you mentioned, it just happens because so many people have got it. You think by this point, at least, they'd have some sort of idea how to prevent it or how to, you know, at least slow it down, because pitchers are, if they don't get it once early on, they're getting it later, or they're getting it more than once, and it's tough to see for a lot of guys. Definitely can halt their progression moving forward. Now, doing a little research on you earlier, I believe you talked to David Hammer about it last week, but early in your career, you drafted by the Giants, and then you were part of a big move to the Minnesota Twins, where you spent a good portion of your career. You were traded along with Joe Nathan and Francisco Liriano for A.J. Pierzynski. Now, that's four pretty big names getting moved in one trade, especially considering the careers that you guys had. Looking back on it now, what was it like being part of a deal with that that much weight to it?
It was great, you know, because later in my career, obviously, I went back to the Giants, and you know, it was funny because even a lot of people there were even brought it up then, but you know. Joe Nathan, what he's done in this game, you know, still playing, Liriano still playing. I mean, it was crazy, you know, and at the time, I'll tell you what, I just got done with the fall league, and I, you know, me being a kid, was wondering what I did wrong to the Giants when they traded me. But, you know, it's also same time pretty neat when you're watching, you know, TV shows on trades and MLB, and that one always pops up. So it's definitely neat to see that, you know, that's still one of the lopsided trades in baseball.
It is. And I remember, you know, looking back, I think, you know, way back when, you know, growing up, baseball was the sport I was always into first and foremost. And I remember, you know, reading over this trade, because when I went back to it, I recognized it right away. And, you know, you don't really understand how big of an impact that made, especially on an organization like the Twins, because all three of you guys, you, Joe Nathan, and Francisco Liriano, made a huge impact to that organization over the careers. And obviously, like Liriano, like you said, has moved on. I believe he's in Pittsburgh now. And then A.J. Pierzynski, a guy who has made an impact on a number of different teams. So it really is crazy to sort of think about how that move was made. But going back before that, even I skipped over, but getting just the simple fact of getting drafted into the MLB, going to a place like San Francisco, granted you didn't really get to play for them too much, but what was it like? You know, you grew up in Florida, correct?
Yeah, yep, sure did.
So what was it like going from Florida to San Francisco?
It was definitely something different for me, I'll tell you that. you know, I remember getting drafted, going right out to San Francisco at the time. They just got their brand new stadium. It was just, you know, it was a new chapter in my life, going out there playing ball. And, you know, the West Coast was, it was just, something new. It's a learning experience. And that's, you know, that's one thing about baseball is much traveling you're doing. You're seeing different parts of, you know, the West Coast, the, you know, the Midwest. It's mm-hmm. just all over the place. You know, it's awesome, actually.
I could imagine being, from Boston, being a Red Sox fan, a team I've always cheered for sort of in the back of my head, you know, a little under the covers, I guess, so nobody exposes me as a fake Boston fan, was the San Francisco Giants. And the main thing was growing up, man, I just love their stadium. One of the most unique fields, like Fenway, just having a bit of a ring to it in that right field hitting into the bay. You know, you saw Barry Bonds launch a ton of home runs over there. It's so cool, and it's definitely a park I'd like to get to.
I definitely recommend it. I mean, that place is beautiful. I mean, you get inside, and it's just, it's unbelievable. So I definitely recommend getting out to that ballpark for sure.
I think someday I'll make the trip one way or the other. I'll get out there, whether I get a drive, walk, or fly, if I'm lucky enough.
There you go. There you go. Walking might take you a little while, but you'll be all right.
Exactly. That might take me a little too long, but if I'm really invested, I can make it work.
Right. There you go.
But you mentioned the traveling, how crazy it is in the MLB, and mainly because of the 162 game schedule. Now, obviously, with the NHL, the NBA, and at 82 games, and obviously football being a little different, but they're only at 16. Do you think that the MLB needs to lighten up their schedule a bit, or do you think it's, you know, from an outsider's point of view, people will be like, oh, you know what, they're not really, you know, working that hard every day because most of, you know, half the game they're sitting down, relaxing. Especially for a guy like you in the bullpen, people will think, yeah, he's just sitting there the whole time. It doesn't matter how many games they play. Do you think 162 is good enough, or do you think they should knock it down a bit?
No, I definitely think 162 is that's where it should be, you know. Regardless if I'm sitting in the bullpen or not, I mean, I'm, you know, I get to the ballpark early, you know, I get my work in. I'm still, you know, like I said, if the game's going on, I could get called at any time. I got to get going. So regardless, you know, there's been plenty of times that it's been, oh, don't worry, you're not going to pitch tonight. Next thing you know, we got extra innings. I got to pitch. So, yeah. I mean, you're always into the game. You're always ready to go. And like I said, when that phone rings, it's okay, let's go. It's time to go. No messing around. So, I mean, 162, I think, is definitely enough. I don't know about them. I don't think that they should cut the games back.
And that's something that's definitely been debated, you know, whether it's been seriously debated at the MLB level or just among the armchair quarterbacks. But I think it's something that one of those debates, you know, the NFL's having the same thing. Should there be more or less games? And I think it'll go on forever. But I can agree with you there. You know, it's just, it seems like it's been 162 for so long. It would be really weird to cut that down because that affects your rotation. That affects every single thing you can imagine in the game of baseball because they've molded the game around a very long schedule. And it right. would be definitely pretty odd to change it.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing is, too, you got to think about, I mean, what are they going to do with the minor league schedule?
Exactly.
You know, are they going to cut that back? You know, at the same time, you know, for instance, tomorrow, September 1st, that's, you know, usually when you have your roster expand. You know, is that going to be in August if they cut it back? It's just, there's a lot of things to think about. I mean, I definitely like the way everything is now. I mean, it's just, I think it's just right the way it is.
Now, you know, you hear in baseball, home field, a lot of sports, you hear home field advantage, but baseball being one of them. You know, every team has their unique stadium, their unique, you know, baseball more than everything, because when you look at it, you know, a hockey arena, a basketball arena, they're all relatively the same. Then none of them really stand out too much. But baseball, you're in your own environment. And especially over the years, it seemed like it's growing slower to more one of like the more the niche kind of sports. Baseball's sort of fading in that sense. But, you know, going into every stadium, do you really feel that home field advantage when you're pitching on the road? Can you hear all the fans yelling at you if you're against or for them?
Yeah, you always hear that. I mean, that's why, you know, home field advantage is the best, because the crowd's getting loud, but, you know, they could be chanting your name. It's just, you know, that extra adrenaline rush when you're at home. You know, it's your own fans. You're coming to your own ballpark. And that's a huge thing. You know, if you need a little bit of a boost, people, you know, you hear your fans chanting, let's go, you know, whatever team you're playing for at the time. So I definitely think home field advantage is huge.
And going through playing at pretty much, I'd imagine you played at almost every single stadium in Major League Baseball. Did you have one that really stuck out at you, that either the fans or just being at the park, you were just kind of blown away by how it was?
Yeah, the one game that I'll never forget is we're going into the playoffs. We're trying to clinch playoffs versus the White Sox at the Metrodome. And they ended up packing, I think it was like almost 56,000 people in the dome or something like that. And it was just loud. I mean, for a baseball game, it was great. You know, the Black fans were behind us. I was even pitching that game. And, you know, like I said, it was just, it was electric. It was great.
Now, reading up on your career, it says, you know, you started as a starting pitcher and then moved into a relief role. What was the number one difference? Obviously, you know, amount you pitch, time you go into the game, those are obvious differences. But what was the big difference between starting and relieving?
It's really your mindset. I mean, starting, you've got 5 days to prepare, where you go to the bullpen and guess what? The phone rings and you're going to be in there for the next hitter. You know, so it's like you're always in bullpen. You have to always be prepared, know who's coming up, so, and know exactly what you're going to do. I mean, and at the same time too, it's kind of tougher because, you know, you only might get one guy to face in the when you come out of the bullpen. So you got to make sure, obviously, get the job done, get them out, do what you have to do. You know, I'm not saying that as a starter, but I'm just saying a starter usually goes his six innings.
Right.
So you're going to face a guy more than, you know, once or twice, but you got a little bit more homework, I guess you could say, when you're a starter, because, you know, like I said, you got a couple of days to relax, scout your opponent a little bit more.
Fair enough. Now, being a pitcher, you have a hand, some guys, you know, Mariano Rivera being one of them. He had one pitch, the cutter, he went to, you know, 98% of the time, it seemed. And you have some pitchers, especially some young pitchers, it seems nowadays, have 5 to 6 pitches in their arsenal. What was the determining factor for the types of pitches you threw and why you threw those pitches?
Well, I had 4 pitches: fastball, curveball, slider, change. When I first came up, I only had 3 of those, which was the fastball, curve, somewhat of a change, I guess you could say. So 2.5. but then, you know, I had to learn, they wanted me to learn a slider, because that was the biggest thing when I was coming up. The slider was the big pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as a starter, you know, as you can see, you're getting these guys who have 4 or 5 pitches. So, you know, it's more stuff, and, you know, that's what usually a starter has, is more stuff to go to, because they're going longer in games. And,
right.
You know, they're going to face the hitters more than one time.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, you see so many young pitchers, and it's fun to watch, especially a lot of the young. I remember when Steven Strasburg debuted, and his curveball, you know, they showcased it on ESPN for like 2 days straight. After his debut, he just had an unbelievable curveball, and so many, you know, pitchers, whether they have, you know, 3 pitches, 5 pitches, 6 pitches, whatever it may be, they really have those, that's the fascinating thing about pitching. They really have those crazy movement on some pitches that makes them unique, and other pitchers, they can just blow one by you, just a regular fastball, and you can't hit it, whether there's a lot of movement on it or not.
Right. And that's all just arm angle, you know, where it comes out of, making sure each pitch looks the same, and then it just drops out. So that's, you know, your good starting pitchers can do that. I mean, even your relievers, the same thing. You know, it's all arm slot and they're making stuff look the same, and then it's not. So that's the good part.
Now, when you started, obviously you start from the windup, and then when you relieve, you start from the stretch. I mean, obviously at a high school level, so it really wasn't much to compare. But was it that much of a difference to you as you moved through your career, whether you started in the windup or the stretch?
It didn't bother me one bit, because regardless, you know, obviously I didn't throw any no-hitters or perfect games. So, yeah. You know, I knew how to pitch out of the, you know, out of the stretch too. So, yeah, that didn't affect me one bit at all.
All right, well, on the air right now with Boof Bonser, former Major League Baseball pitcher, starter, and reliever, more notably for the Minnesota Twins. A couple more questions here before I let you go. Sort of a fantasy question, I guess you could say. You're on the mound one last time, and you get to pick any batter you can go up against. Who, past, present, future, who would it be?
Oh, wow. That's interesting on the spot there. You know what? It's funny. I couldn't even answer that, because I wouldn't even know who to even put up there, to be honest with you. I mean, that's crazy.
Because I always wonder, well, how about at least a guy, you know, you went against? Is there somebody that, I know David asked you a similar question, but is there one moment you look back on, one pitch you made, one strikeout you got, one home run you let up even, that you really go back on and, man, I'm glad I did that, or I wish I did this?
There was a couple times, actually, you know, because, you know, obviously all the home run balls that I've given up, I'd like to have those back.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, for me, it's just more of, I wish I would have just been able to locate a little bit better, and then I wouldn't have those issues. But like I said, it's tough picking out just one person to face and going after that. That's crazy.
Right. I get you there. Last but not least, before I let you go, you get any advice for a baseball player on his way up, whether he's 8 years old or 18 years old, you know, attempting to work it, to make it to the big time? With the amount of drafts in the MLB, it almost seems like, you know, the chances are expanded, but you don't see many guys getting drafted in the 35th, 40th round to make it. You know, what's the number one bit of advice you have to a young player trying to make baseball his career?
I would tell him to be patient. Have fun with the game. It's definitely a game, because, you know, the more frustrated you get with the game, it's just gonna beat you up more. So the more fun you can have, enjoy it. Obviously, you know, stay in the best shape you can. Take care of your arm, or you know, as a pitcher, definitely do what you need to do. But that, like I said, the biggest thing is just have fun and enjoy it all.
That's definitely something I would agree with. That's the number one thing when I played baseball. It was just, you know, your coach would have preached to you at a young age just to remember to have fun, because baseball is just one of those sports. You know, you always can have fun playing baseball, whether you're winning or losing. And I think a lot of athletes, when they get to the professional level, might forget about that. So it's always nice to see a guy, you know, laughing it up on in the dugout when people might say, oh, he's not taking it seriously. You know, you should bench him. It's always good to see someone like that. Something like that in a sport that, you know, people are slowly sort of tuning out, and you want to bring that fun back. One more question before I let you go, actually. David Ortiz, were you a teammate of his in Minnesota?
Not in Minnesota.
But in Boston.
When I was in Boston, yeah, when I was in Boston, I was. Yeah. David, I think the year I left, I got to Minnesota, I believe, was the year that he went over to Boston. So I just missed him there.
Okay.
But definitely played enough spring training games. And when I came up in 06, we definitely did some battles, that's for sure.
Now, what was your experience? Didn't seem like it was too long here in Boston, but what was your experience like playing for the Red Sox?
It was great. Great fans. Very good team by a veteran team that was there. I wasn't there very long, but it was a great time coming to that ballpark every single day. That's for sure.
All right, Boof. Thank you for joining me. Real quick though, being on VictoryLaneRadio.com, broadcasting a ton of auto racing in New England, have you ever been interested or ever watched any sort of auto racing before?
I have actually. When I grew up in Florida, I used to go to Daytona all the time. So,
oh, sweet.
Definitely have watched plenty of NASCAR racing, that's for sure.
Well, that's good to hear, because NASCAR and baseball, they're kind of on the same page. They need as many fans as they can get to help keep them alive. So I want to thank you for coming on the show. It was great talking to you, and maybe we'll get together again in the future.
Sounds good. I definitely appreciate you having me, and thanks again.
All right, everybody. Boof Bonser, former Major League Baseball pitcher. Thanks to him for joining me here on the show. Awesome talking to him. If you hadn't heard his interview last week with David Hammer on Hollering with Hammer on the Victory Lane Radio Network, it's on victorylaneradio.com. You can check that out. Great interview there. David, ask him a little different set of questions, so I tried to go stray away from him a bit. But great, great guy just from listening to that interview. So I'm glad he agreed to come on so we could talk and sort of get some general idea. Being a professional athlete in any sport, it's a very unique life when you consider, just your average, like right now myself, I don't really, I'm not a professional athlete. I have a different, I go to a job, I drive to the parking garage, walk to work, go back to the parking garage and drive home. But being a professional athlete of any sort, you have a completely different schedule. You're practicing. You're getting, you're traveling a ton. You're playing a game you love rather than just working a job at a store or something like that. So it's always interesting to hear about that lifestyle and how you get there and what it's like when you get there. So I really do appreciate Boof for coming on, especially a guy who played while it was a minor. Amount of time. He did play for the Red Sox, so it's always cool to hear. But I do want to finish up the show talking some fantasy football. I haven't really talked about it much, but it's something that, whether you want to admit it or not, pretty much every guy plays fantasy football that I know of. So if anyone wants to call in, have any questions about your fantasy teams or any, sits or starts, whatever you want to do, you can give me a call, 774-745-5950. That's 774-745-5950. I'm going to go through the lineups I have. I've done two of my drafts so far. I have another, I think, two to go. I don't think I've done as many fantasy drafts in 1 year as I'm doing this year. I think three of them are for money, so that kind of intrigues you to do more. Plus, I might do some DraftKings or FanDuel this year, which is always fun to do as well. But I don't know about you guys at home, because I have that problem with my fantasy team, especially doing multiple lineups, that I feel the need to attempt to draft the same exact team in every single league. And it's almost, I'd imagine it's not too odd to say that, but I'd imagine, it's just one of those things where, I think the first draft that I did is going to be the best team in fantasy football history. So I want to keep drafting that over and over and over. And usually it doesn't work, but, sometimes it does. Last year or 2 years ago, whenever Adrian Peterson got in trouble for hitting his kid, that was a year that screwed me up definitely, because I had Adrian Peterson in three leagues because I fell under that impression that, hey, this is the best team I could put together, so I'm going to put this together and I'm going to win all the money ever, and I ended up coming in last in two of those three leagues. So definitely not something you want to do, especially ones where you have consequences for coming in last. Luckily, I think I made. I finished in last in the regular season in the consequence league, but I managed to get out of that place in the playoffs, and I ended up not coming in last. I believe, because I haven't had to do anything. I think we had another loser, in that sense. So, it's always fantasy football is always something fun to do. And again, you know, most people do it. I love doing it. I just don't. It's so much easier than playing fantasy hockey, fantasy baseball, et cetera, because it's not something you have to check every day. That's why I think so many people love it. Love watching football in general, too. It's because it's every, you know, it's just once a week you got to pay attention to. So looking at a couple of my lineups here, we'll go through my first lineup. This is on a Yahoo League, I believe. Yeah, this is my Yahoo League. I had Yahoo League, a NFL.com league, which I've never done fantasy on NFL.com, and I have an ESPN league, which I've done, you know, that's kind of the go-to. I just like the setup on that. But Yahoo, in both of the drafts I've done so far, I have drafted Tom Brady. Too early? I don't know. But I did draft Brady in both of my drafts. I have him on the bench because I am confident he'll come back and have a great year. So we'll look at the first roster here. This one is a one quarterback, two running back, three receiver, and a tight end with a defense and kicker league. I have Alex Smith at quarterback to fill in for four games over Tom Brady. Alex Smith, he's a very consistent quarterback. That's pretty much why I took him. I had a choice between him and a couple other young guys. I think Mariota might have been one of them. Maybe Derek Carr. You know, there are a couple decent guys that I could have chose instead. But I looked at Alex Smith. He has a solid team around him. And with only 30 seconds to pick, he kind of had to make a quick choice. So I kind of glaze over the schedule. And Alex Smith's first three opponents are San Diego, Houston, and the Jets. So they're playing the Steelers week four, but I took the gamble that, you know, he should put some points up against the Chargers, probably put some points up against Houston. The Jets will be 50-50, and the Steelers will be tough. But, you know, if Kansas City plays any amount like they did at the end of last year, they could be a good team going forward. So Alex Smith's my guy there. Wide receivers. Let's look at my bench, too. Wide receivers, I have Amari Cooper, Tavon Austin, Travis Benjamin, and Will Fuller. Now, Amari Cooper, again, kind of don't really need to explain why I picked him up. One of the best receivers in the game. Derek Carr is only getting better. The Raiders are only getting better. So I'm looking for Cooper to have a great year this year. Tavon Austin, again, he's got a quarterback with him this time. Whether you agree that the Rams made the right move in picking up Goff, that's a whole other deal. But I think the Rams are, you know, they're not the best, but they're pretty good. And I think they could have a good offense. Plus, Tavon Austin returns punts and returns kicks. And just his sure speed, you can guarantee he'll have some sort of big breakaway at least, you know, once a game, I think, whether it's 20 or 30 yards or 80. One of the fastest receivers in the league. The other two receivers I went with Travis Benjamin playing for San Diego. Again, Phillip Rivers loves to throw the ball. I thought Benjamin was one of his top targets, may not be his number one top target, but I think Benjamin can give me some good minutes off the bench because I'll sort of be, you know, switching him back and forth with a couple of other guys. And then I have Will Fuller, the rookie wide receiver for the Texans. From my understanding, he's a first round pick, and, you know, Brock Osweiler loves him. I read a couple of quotes on him the last couple of days, you know. And it's just Osweiler praising how good Will Fuller is. So I drafted Fuller in both my leagues, I think, with close to the last pick. And I you know, even if Osweiler doesn't find success with him right away, you know he's going to be trying to give him the ball because of all the praise he's had. So I'm going to look at Will Fuller to give me some nice fantasy points, sleeper pick points sort of this season. I think I have him starting week one against Chicago because I like that matchup better than Travis Benjamin against the Chiefs. On my bench right now, we're not at the bench yet. We're at the running back position. I get three really good running backs, I think, in this league, my Yahoo league. I have Devontae Freeman, one of the top backs last year for the Atlanta Falcons. I expect him to have another good year this year, first week against Tampa Bay. I'm hoping he can get a nice performance in there. I have DeMarco Murray, and this was a pick that really, you know, I had to think about. DeMarco Murray, when he's on his game, is one of the best running backs in the league. He went to Tennessee this year. And then I remember that, you know, Tennessee drafted Derrick Henry, who, for all intents and purposes, is being praised as one of the top running backs to come out of college in a good amount of time. Heisman winner, I believe, out of Alabama. So, you know, I drafted DeMarco Murray pretty high up, too. I took a big risk on him, and that's where I'm kind of worrying because, you know, will he get the same amount of touches? Will he get more touches, I should say, than Derrick Henry? Because, you know, if Derrick Henry has a good start, DeMarco Murray could drop to that second back role. And as much as I think Tennessee will run two backs, I think they'll run them half and half, sort give or take, 60-40 maybe. You know, I'm really hoping DeMarco Murray is that top guy, or I'm going to look into trading him because I'm not sure how I feel about him right now. And then my third running back is TJ Yeldon of Jacksonville. I think Yeldon's really underrated. I think he can have a good year, especially as being a third running back. He starts off against Green Bay, which I don't really like that matchup necessarily, but I think Yeldon's a perfect running back to come off your bench to sort of hop in when you need him, because I think he'll put up consistent, whether he might not put up the best numbers all year, I think they'll be consistent. Looking at my tight ends, I get Julius Thomas and Jordan Cameron. I didn't think I missed at all on those two picks. Julius Thomas with Jacksonville, again, Blake Bortles. He's going to make him his number one target, I hope. Thomas had an incredible season when he was with Denver, a couple of seasons, now in Jacksonville, signing a big money deal. And then Jordan Cameron with Miami, he was fantastic on the Browns, goes to Miami, has a better quarterback to throw him the ball. Didn't have an insane year last year, but I looked at him to have a good year. I have him on my bench for week one, though, as Miami will go against Seattle, so I'll pass on that matchup right now. The rest of my bench, I have Tom Brady, of course, waiting for week four against the Browns, to week five against the Browns to put him in, because he'll probably put up 600 points. And I had a glitch when I was drafting my last pick, so I have to cut this guy because I don't think I'm going to use him. But Jeff Janis of the Packers, a wide receiver, he made a ridiculous catch last year. I think one of the Hail Mary catches. But Janis actually has a broken hand. I don't know how much he'll play, and I really don't want him on the team. I set up my Q list or whatever because I had the second to last pick, I think, in this league. So the way my draft was going to go is I would have had to wait about like 20 picks or something for my last pick. So I put like three guys in my queue, and they must have all got taken because the game, the site gave me Janis. So I think I'm going to be getting rid of him and seeing what I can do. For kicker, I took on the Arizona Cardinals kicker, Chandler Catanzaro. He had a good year last year. And again, you can't really go too wrong with kickers. I just usually look for a guy who's on a good team. If I can't get Goskowski, I'll go for, like I did Catanzaro, I'll go for Hauschka in Seattle. I'll just go for a guy on a good team because if they score a lot of points, you're getting a lot of kicks. And then on defense, I have the Green Bay Packers defense against Jacksonville, and I picked up the New York Giants defense as well. I like to have a backup at every position if I can. Kicker, I didn't draft. I think I lined up to. I think that's what I tried to do, draft a backup kicker, and it drafted me Janis. But you know, I see some football experts, they're probably, you know, more of an expert than I am, that, you know, they have one defense and one kicker and they just swap them out. For me, I like to stay consistent. If I have, if I don't have to drop anybody, I won't. And, you know, if they say the Green Bay defense was having a great season and, you know, I don't want to risk having to drop them to get a defense in their place in the, in their bye week. So, I like to have a backup, at least one backup at every position. That's my Yahoo team. I think it's pretty good, actually. I think I have a trade offer right now that I kind of want to look at. Nope, that was just a notification of another trade. So, you know, I think that's a decent team. Like I said, I'm going to drop Janis, I think. I'll look at the free agent pool and see if I want to make any other moves, but I kind of like where I am right now. I think Alex Smith can be okay. You know, your biggest positions are quarterback and running back, in my opinion. I think my running backs are really good, and I think Alex Smith can be good enough. And this is a – give you an idea of what I'm drafting in here. I believe this is a 16 – this is a 16-person league. So I think for a 16-man league, I think my team came out pretty good. You know, usually when you draft bigger leagues, you have to really dig to the bottom of the barrel, but – You know, I think my worst player being, what, Travis Benjamin. I think that's pretty good. Then going over to ESPN into my second league here, I've drafted four already. This was a, let's see here, standings. This was a 10-person league, so team was going to be a little bit better, and I think, I look, yeah, I'd say this team is definitely a little bit better, for sure. So I have quarterbacks. I have Tom Brady again. I managed to get him. This time a little later, I drafted Drew Brees as well. I took Brees first, realized nobody was drafting Brady, which kind of surprised because there's a lot of local guys in this fantasy draft. But I managed to snag Brady a little later in the draft and get him on my bench because I will take that four-game hit. Running back situation here. I'm really confident in this running back tandem. I have Ezekiel Elliott. This is actually a flex league, so I have a flex rather than a three wide receiver deal like the last league. So my two running backs starting, I have Ezekiel Elliott and CJ Anderson. Anderson, again, a guy you can rely on for Denver, especially if they're wondering about how their quarterback situation is going to be. I think Anderson's a perfect guy to draft. And then Ezekiel Elliott, projected to be one of the top running backs in the league already. As an Ohio State fan, I watched him play plenty, and I really enjoyed what he did. You know, they're projecting him over 1,000 yards, and barring any injuries or stupid things he does with smoking weed or anything like that. Now, granted, he didn't smoke the weed. That's kind of why I'm angry at everyone jumping at him. You know, he just went to the weed store and looked at the weed. He didn't smoke it. So, you know, I think he's going to be okay. I think he'll have a good year. Running for wide receivers, I have Jarvis Landry in my flex spot right now. I have Amari Cooper again. Landry with Miami, I think he's going to be their top receiver this year between him and Devontae Parker, but I think Landry is going to get the nod. Amari Cooper again, and then Mohamed Sanu I picked up in the last round. I think that's a solid pickup for Atlanta, mainly because, you know, he had a good year in Cincinnati, a couple of years I think he was in Cincinnati. Coming to Atlanta, Roddy White's kind of slowing down. Julio Jones is you'd imagine he'll be the number one guy getting covered, as well as Devontae Freeman. Excuse me. So when they're running out of options, I think Mohamed Sanu will be a good guy to put in there when one of my main wide receivers is on a bye week. And then I also have, of course, I have three other receivers, actually. I have a handful of receivers in this league. I think I drafted a couple extra just to trade at another point. But I have Jordan Matthews with Philly. Again, think he's a good receiver. Week one against Cleveland, I'm going to consider putting him in because it's Cleveland. I have Dez Bryant. I kind of forgot to mention him, but he was my first or second pick, I believe. Probably my first pick. I wasn't really sure if I wanted to go with Dez just in case he got hurt again, because last year he got hurt. But, you know, he's such a good receiver when he's healthy. And I think I like Dak Prescott throwing to him more than I did Tony Romo. Now we'll see. But I think Dez is going to have a decent year this year. I didn't like the fact that I drafted the two Cowboys top players, mainly because I just don't like doing that, in the sense that they probably won't have many games where they're both over 100 yards at their respective positions, which annoys the heck out of me. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, they should be based on just how good they are. And then again, one of my last picks, I picked up Will Fuller. You know, you find that guy. I think everyone can agree with me. You find one guy every year that you think nobody else knows about, and you want to get him every single time. And Will Fuller is my guy this year. On my bench as well, I have running back, flex player, Isaiah Crowell. Now, obviously, he pissed off a lot of people with the stuff he was saying on the picture he posted on Instagram or whatever. But regardless, he did me pretty well last year when I lost a lot. I had two running backs go down. If last year was last year the year AP, no, it was 2 years ago. So it wasn't the AP year. But last year I had my top two running backs go down, and I had to pick up Crowell. And he did fine. He did enough that, you know, my team sucked anyway. But so it really doesn't say that much, but I feel a bit of, you know, I feel like connected to him enough that, you know, hey, man, I could give you a chance when my team's good. and you can show me what he can do. So I like him because he's a solid back for Cleveland. Again, for Cleveland. So, you know, if they can't throw the ball, they'll run the ball. And he can catch some passes, too. So I'd like to see how he does for me this year. Tight end, I have Zach Ertz on Philly and Delanie Walker on Tennessee. Zach Ertz, I think he's one of the best or most underrated tight ends in the league. Again, the quarterback situation in Philly is kind of weird. But nevertheless, going against Cleveland week one, I like that matchup for sure. Then Delanie Walker, I like him better, I think, if he's on top of his game, that is. I like him better than Zach Ertz, but they're going up against Minnesota's defense, and I like Minnesota's defense better than Cleveland's. But as we get closer, I'll rehash and see how I like it. Last but not least, defense-wise, I have two defenses again. I picked up the Panthers defense. I got that one early. I think in this league, I was the first to draft a kicker and the first to draft defense. You never know when is too early to draft him, so you never want to wait till the last minute and then find out that everyone started taking the good kickers and good punt, good defenses. So I was the first guy to go for him because I was comfortable with my team where it was. I was starting to draft benches, I think. So I'm like, you know what? Instead of drafting benches, a depth bench, not even like my first and second men off the bench, I'll just go to the defense and kicker. Like I said, I picked up the Panthers, though I got them on the bench for week one as they face Denver, and I'd rather take my chance against with the Bills defense against Baltimore in week one. I think I'm going to go with that. And then my kicker, Steven Goskowski. Despite saying I like to draft backups at every position, I did not draft a backup kicker. So Goskowski will lead me to week nine. And then in week nine, I will make a decision based on injuries or whatever I need to do to get a kicker into the mix. So overall, I think my team, my first team I went off, I like a little better. But this second team, again, in a smaller league, I think will do fine. That's just the thing. You know, when you have a 10-team league, everyone's teams are going to be pretty stacked. So it's sort of just a matter of whose superstars don't get hurt and whose superstars really perform. And that's where this team kind of worries me because I don't know if I can trust this team as much as I can trust the other team. I trust my drafting of non-superstars more than I trust my drafting of superstars. Because every time I draft a big superstar, if I have a really high pick, except when I'm taking, you know, Brady when he's on top of his game and not suspended for the first four games, you know, when I'm taking him, you know, top five overall, I feel confident in that, especially a quarterback. But when I'm drafting, you know, big name wide receivers, big name running backs, I always get worried that they're going to get hurt, that they're going to underperform. I mean, you see a guy like Arian Foster be top fantasy one year, and the next year, he's terrible. So, you know, you never really know what you'll get, but I like to think, as every fantasy owner likes to think, they know everything and they always draft the best lineup. So we'll see how I do this year. I think I'll do pretty good. I got two more drafts coming up, and maybe we'll talk about those next week as they should be done by next week's show. Next week's what, the 7th? Yes, it is. So yeah, they should be done by next week. So we'll do some more fantasy talk next week. I'm also looking to get another guest on for next week's show, and you know, whatever else goes on, we'll talk some Darlington. We'll figure some stuff out for next week's show. So thank you guys for joining me here on the Sheehan Sports Hour. I appreciate y'all stopping by. I will see you next Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Again, September 7th. I'll be back to school by then, which is a pain in the butt, but hey, one more semester and I'll be done. So, you know, we'll see what happens. So thank you guys for joining me on the Sheehan Sports Hour, and I will talk to you guys next week.
And that'll do it for the Sheehan Sports Hour. We'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. And remember, if it has anything to do with sports, the Sheehan Sports Hour will have you covered. Heard exclusively on the Victory Lane Radio Network.
HDRadioNetwork.com.